This is a podcast from RTE Radio 1.
Hello and welcome to Audioscope. Avril Daly, you're a public affairs executive with Fighting Blindness. Busy job, but you're also visually impaired yourself.
That's right. Yes, indeed. A very busy job, certainly. And yes, I am visually impaired myself.
Tell us about the job. What does the public affairs executive mean?
Well, it's quite a range of areas, really, that I suppose my role would cover. Certainly, I would be very much involved in being a spokesperson for the organisation and the conditions that we are trying to find treatments for. Also, I would probably be the person that people would talk to if they've been newly diagnosed. Certainly, we find a lot more people are being referred to us from their ophthalmologists now. So we probably would be the first point of contact for people who require further information. And therefore, I would speak to them. And if people require counselling, I would forward them on then to our counselling centre, the Inside Counselling Centre. But also I'm very much involved in promoting the research that we do through various different ways, through the media, but through individual scientific networks as well. We try to promote retinal research in general in Ireland. There's about 70 people working in retinal research here in this country. Fighting Blindness funds 6 projects. So there are other people working in retinal disease that, you know, wouldn't, you know, be necessarily funded by Fighting Blindness. But we try to bring all of these researchers together. So our belief really is if there's more people working on these treatments, the faster we'll get them. And, you know, for example, somebody in Dublin could be working on a particular treatment and maybe somebody in Cork could be working on something that could help. And if they're talking to each other, then obviously it saves time and it would totally accelerate the search for a cure.
And it also helps, I think, with researchers with, if your research can be very lonely at times, can't it? I think.
Absolutely.
And if you're working with people that are working on similar things.
Yes.
You spoke about the range of diseases or the range of conditions that Fighting Blindness works with. It's primarily disease to the retina, which is the back part of the eye, isn't it?
Yes, it is. One of the main conditions, I suppose, that we really look at and most of our research is involved in finding treatments and trying to find out the root causes of retinitis pigmentosa or RP.
What is RP?
RP is very basically, it is, and simplistically, in its most simplistic terms, really, I suppose.
Yeah, I know you're not an ophthalmologist.
Because it's a very strange condition insofar as that it generally the first symptoms of retinitis pigmentosa are night blindness and an inability to adjust to the changes in light levels. For example, if you're walking down the street, you're walking down Grafton Street, it's a nice sunny day, and you walk into a shop off Grafton Street and the lighting's a little dull, it's actually quite disorientating. You know, the changes in light levels are much more striking to the individual that is affected by RP than somebody who otherwise isn't. You know, so I mean, other people will just carry on as normal. They won't even notice a change, whereas somebody with RP will. It's a gradual deterioration also of peripheral or side vision over a period of time and leading to eventual tunnel vision. So it's night blindness. It's an inability for us to adjust to the changes in light levels and then the gradual loss of side vision. Now, in saying that, and the reason that I'm saying that, you know, it's quite a complex condition is, in certain cases, people won't always lose the peripheral vision gradually and nice and evenly so that it ends up as tunnel vision. Sometimes people will lose a little bit more of their central vision than their side vision and that can cause a lot of problems. And, you know, if you have tunnel vision and you can see right ahead of you, sometimes it's easier to get around. But if you have lost your side vision in one eye and you've lost your central vision in another eye, then it causes a lot more difficulty in manoeuvring, you know, in certainly through cities or, you know, urban areas, very, very difficult. So, I mean, that's really a major problem.
So RP would be one of the main conditions. And there's quite a lot of people with RP, especially relatively young people.
Relatively young. There's about 5,000 people with RP in Ireland that we know of.
Now, that's relatively substantial, really.
Yeah, it is quite substantial. Yes, and it's a genetic condition. It can occur at birth. It can develop in childhood, early adulthood, and even people in their 40s, 50s, 60s can be newly diagnosed with ORP. It's that type of condition. There are conditions where there's types of the condition where it's late onset. So, for example, somebody might be diagnosed until they're 28, 29, 30, that around that age group. But the other difficulty with ORP and the diagnosis of ORP is that because it's a genetic condition, what you may have is somebody presenting with the symptoms of ORP, yet they don't have any particular family history. They look back and they say, "Oh, did Auntie Mary, what was wrong with her eyes? I remember what was the condition," but there was no name for it at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to see where the sort of the family history is and the genetic pattern is. So mm-hmm. therefore, they present as sporadic cases where there's no family history. And in that sense, it's a huge shock to the individual who is diagnosed, but also to the family, because this could signify the start of this condition in that family. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues to be considered.
And it's not the same as somebody who has total loss of sight. If somebody has tunnel vision or if somebody is losing sight mm-hmm. slowly, it's probably more difficult, maybe especially in the past, it's probably more difficult to actually notice. And somebody might yes. actually be managing with yes. very little vision for a very long time.
That's a very good point. And this happens quite a bit. And what you'll find is, you know, people with ORP say, if a sighted person looked through my eyes, they would probably be shocked. But you
lost
completely. Yeah. It's surprising how the brain makes you think that something is normal because there's no name for what the person has. Now, a number of people have been diagnosed with ORP following accidents, unfortunately, things like car accidents or motor accidents.
My guide dog
has a bit of a cold.
No, she's dreaming. She's barking in her dreams in there. So after accidents, so maybe somebody was driving along the road, didn't realise there was anything wrong with their sight.
Certainly, if somebody is going for an eye test, a very basic eye test, if you go to an optician's, or if some people are having driving test eye examinations for driving tests, what you do is you're asked to read a chart, okay? So somebody with classic ORP is going to be able to read the chart, because having ORP doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be short or long-sighted.
Yeah.
So, you know, you glasses don't help with ORP, so therefore you can read the chart and you'll get your license. And the person doesn't know there's anything underlying there because they can read. They can see the same as everybody else, or so they think.
Until situations where severely
deteriorates and there's other aspects involved. And certainly then it's very difficult for family members and spouses and partners and children to understand, you know, all of a sudden, because they say, well, you know, she gets around, she looks like there's nothing wrong with her. She acts as if there's nothing, you know, amiss. So, you know, it's very hard then for people to try and understand what actually is going on with the condition.
You personally have RP, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And would you have found those kinds of things that people find it difficult to understand? Because you, I understand that you only discovered that you had RP at, you know, in your early 20s.
I was 22.
How did you find out?
It was an interesting discovery, actually, because I was going to buy a car, and I went to a regular high street optician to have my eyes tested. And he looked into my eye and he kind of noticed there was probably something a little bit, you know, out of the ordinary. So he asked me, he brought me into this room, and there was a special lighting in the room. So he had a good look into my eyes. But when I was going to the chair, the lights were off. It was kind of very dimly lit. When I was going to the chair was, if you can imagine, up on a step. There was a step up to the chair. And of course, I just fell over the step, fell on top of the chair. And he said, "Are you okay?" I was like, "Well, you know, I just can't see in the dark. I've got night blindness," because I had diagnosed myself, of course. And he said, "You know, you have what?" I was like, "Oh, I can't see in the dark. I haven't been able to see in the dark since I was about 12. And he was like, "Really?" And he said, do you have other difficulties? And I said, "Well, when I'm out walking with my friends," which was the case since I was a very young child, they'd say, "Step, you know, mind the door, mind this, mind that." You know, it's just people almost got used to the fact that I had this thing called night blindness, which was not a clinically defined thing. It was something that I made up myself to explain the fact that I couldn't see in the dark.
And did you feel as a child, before you realised that you had RP, that you were clumsy, that you banged into things?
Yes, very, very clumsy. I was always considered to be a little bit clumsy, I have to say. I would have a tendency to walk into things, certainly. I was terrible at sports. I've come from a tradition of great hurlers. And unfortunately, I didn't measure up, because if this litter came towards me, I'd run away. You know, I couldn't see it coming towards me. I could never follow it on the pitch or anything like that. And similarly, tennis, my mother used to call me Slaughter the Slitter, really, actually, is what she used to call me, because I was terrible at all of this kind of thing. I couldn't. So they just thought I had no interest then, you know, or she has no interest in this or blah, blah, whatever. But, I mean, certainly I noticed from an early age, and I had been to opticians at an early age and said this, but, you know, I suppose I didn't display any of the other symptoms, so it wasn't investigated. And maybe that was a good thing. Sometimes you think maybe it was a good thing, or maybe,
and,
you know.
In hindsight, do you think that, well, maybe lack of interest or lack of ability in sport was sight related?
Oh, completely sight related. Absolutely. It was sight related. I just couldn't do it. So I gave up, you know, and I didn't know why I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I just thought I was terrible at this particular sport, so I'll just forget about this and I'll concentrate on, you know, acting. You know, I was very into drama and dancing and, you know, all of that sort of end of things. So I kind of went into that side of that area because I was useless at the sport.
So getting a diagnosis at 22, already you had your whole personality formed,
yes,
as a sighted person.
Yes.
So to suddenly be told that you have this condition, which is a degenerative condition, were you told at the time that it was a degenerative condition?
Yes, of course.
That must have been a shock in some ways.
Yes, it was. It was a shock, yet. You know, it was a shock. But I remember having the letter from the optician to give to the GP, which of course I opened. And this was the very early days of the internet. And I did look up retinitis pigmentosa on the internet, so I knew what it was. And instead of being shocked, it might sound strange, but my initial feeling was one of relief, because there was now a name to something that I had. And I was going around for years thinking I was just very clumsy and, you know, an awkward person to be out with, you know, because you had to be, you know, take Avril to the ladies and all this kind of thing. And so it almost was a relief, because I felt, OK, well, now I know what it is. Now I know what I'm dealing with.
Yeah. And aha.
Yes, exactly.
That's why.
The light bulb moment, really. You know, it's like, OK, this makes an awful lot of sense. And I think initially it was probably harder for my family than it was for me, because I had known all the time that this, you know, I mean, you know, when you have these little thoughts like, is that the side of my nose that I'm looking at? Or is that just what is obstructing my vision here? You know, I mean, little things that you would think to yourself, whereas family, it's very, very shocking, because they don't think there's anything wrong. I mean, they know about the night blindness, you know, or as I called it. But, you know, they're really shocked, because they're saying, oh, my God, where did this come from? There is no evidence in my family of this condition. And I come from a large, well, immediate family is quite small, but my extended family, I come from a very large group of cousins and all of that, and there's absolutely no sign of this condition on either side of the family. And so, of course, you have your parents going, is it my side? Does it come from here? Did it come from there? And maybe auntie's such a person. Did she have... I know she had bad eyesight. I don't know what she had. Or, you know, my great grandfather, you know, had given up teaching. Why did he give up teaching? Was it something to do with his eyes? You know, things like that. You know, so you're going back and you're trying to find out. But the way I look at that is, you know, there's no point in looking at something in that way and saying, oh, where did it come from? It's let's deal with it now. And let's not have to go, OK, you know, whatever.
And how did you come to deal with it then, at the age of 22 and onwards?
Initially,
what were you working? Or
I was, yes,
college?
I was.
What,
I had finished college, and I was working in one of my in a job that I really, really enjoyed, and I really, really liked, and I was doing very well in. And I was working in event management and publishing, which is what I really wanted to do, and all of that. So that was really, really good, and I was enjoying it. But you do have to reconsider certain things. I mean, obviously, I was getting a car because I really needed to have a car to get around with the type of job that I was doing. I needed to be flexible. I needed, you know, to be able to go off and do things, whatever that needed to be done, and so. It was, you know, a consideration, oh, am I going to have to change my entire life? And I suppose when you're 22, you're not really looking at things the way you do when you're 32. Do you know, 22, you're like, oh, no, I can't drive. Well, what do you mean I can't drive? Oh, dear God, my life is over because I can't drive. You know, that was a huge consideration to me.
Was that the biggest thing at the time?
At the time, because, I mean, that was where I was at my life. Yeah. I mean, what does this mean for my career? Does this mean that I can't do what I've been trained for, what I've studied to do and all of this, you know? And these are the thoughts that occupy your mind. I mean, you know, to be very honest, what actually happened was when I did get referred to, the very first ophthalmologist that I was referred to asked me, did I like dogs? You know, and I was kind of looking at her sort of incredulously, and she said, you know, because you probably will need to have a guide dog in the short term. Your condition is very advanced. And that's quite shocking now, because that's really, to somebody who's a sighted person all their lives, it's kind of okay.
The guide dog is the last resort for many people.
So this must be quite serious.
Yeah. Avril Daly from Fighting Blindness, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bethan.
You've been listening to a podcast from RTE Radio 1. For more details, visit rte.ie/Radio 1.